And the views and opinions on Gaza Corner are mine and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of KALW, a public media. Israel is already viewed by many people, including government leaders throughout the world, scholars, students, and many more, as a pariah state for its disregard for international law since its inception. Also, the war crime of apartheid, 57 years of occupation, and the ongoing genocide against Palestinians. But now, in just a week, the International Court of Justice, I'll refer to as the ICJ, and the International Criminal Court, the ICC, poured cement onto Israel's pariah status, as well as further isolating the United States, which continues to have Israel's back at every turn. First, let me give you a little bit of background, a little ABC about the ICJ and the ICC. So both of them are based in The Hague, but they are separate entities. The ICJ, also known as the World Court, is the UN's primary judicial entity, and it's the world's highest court, the court of last resort. It handles complaints between states, and the ICC, the International Criminal Court, investigates and brings charges against individuals rather than states. Israel recognizes the International Court of Justice. It's a member, but rejects the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, as does the United States. Other countries as well, India, China, Russia, Iran, most Arab countries also do not recognize the ICC, but Palestine does. The ICJ has 124 member countries, including all European countries and most of Africa and Latin America, Australia, New Zealand, etc. Last Monday, Karim Khan, the ICC chief prosecutor, requested pre-trial arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, as well as Hamas military leaders Yahya Sinwar and Mohammed Dieff, and Hamas's head of its political wing, Ismail Haniyeh. Despite the fact that he almost certainly, from all I've read, had no role in the planning of the October 7th attacks. It was planned by the military wing. Yet, Prosecutor Khan chose not to issue an arrest warrant, for example, for Israel's Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi, who has played an essential role in the ongoing genocide. It's important to note that Khan did not include any charges under Chapter 6 of the Geneva Convention, which is the chapter on genocide. What he limited his findings to were Chapters 7 and 8, which are war crimes and crimes against humanity. Khan chose to ignore Israel's many war crimes prior to October 7th, as if history began that day, although the conflict dates back to before Israel's creation, as I detailed in last week's Gaza Corner. The ICC charged Hamas's Sinwar, Dieff, and Haniyeh of extermination and murder, taking hostages, rape and sexual assault, torture, abuse of prisoners, and harm to their personal dignity. Khan also detailed the charges against Netanyahu.
That I have reasonable grounds to believe, on the basis of evidence collected and examined by my office, that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant bear criminal responsibility for the following international crimes committed on the territory of the State of Palestine from at least the 8th of October 2023. The crimes include starvation of civilians as a method of warfare, willfully causing great suffering, serious injury to body or health or cruel treatment, willful killing or murder, and intentionally directing attacks against a civilian population, as well as crimes against humanity of extermination and or murder, persecution, and allegations of crimes of committing other inhumane acts. It's alleged that these crimes were committed in the context of the ongoing armed conflict and as part of a widespread and systematic attack against the civilian population of Gaza pursuant to a state policy.
Israel and the United States, to no one's surprise, are very upset with Prosecutor Khan. But context really will let you understand just how upset they are, because they teamed up, Israel and the United States teamed up to oust the previous ICC prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, due to her investigating U.S. war crimes in Afghanistan. So the Trump administration was irate. And the ICC ruled that it has jurisdiction over the West Bank and Gaza, quote-unquote, abuses. So Israel was incentivized to find a way to get rid of Fatou Bensouda. So the U.S. and Israel were able to force Bensouda out, and they had a hand in electing Karim Khan as the ICC chief prosecutor. So their own pick has now issued these pretrial arrest warrants. It's interesting, Khan did very little, actually nothing, until this week. And there have been wars in Gaza, I would say more unilateral assaults on Gaza, 2008, 09, 2012, 2014, 2021, and 2018, Israeli snipers killed many, many unarmed protesters during the Great March of Return. The ICC did nothing. But now Karim Khan is speaking out. And this is how he describes what had been the ICC's actions and how he sees his role.
Of course, I've had some elected leaders speak to me and be very blunt. This court is built for Africa and for thugs like Putin, was what one senior leader told me. We don't view it like that. This court is the legacy of Nuremberg. This court is a sad indictment of humanity. This court should be the triumph of law over power and brute force. Grab what you can, take what you want, do what you will. And we're going to simply be, we're not going to be dissuaded.
There is no precedent for issuing international arrest warrants against senior officials in so-called democratic countries. So this is a first. To date, the ICC has only acted against government officials in countries that were responsible for war crimes in Africa and other non-Western countries. There is little doubt Israel will try to convince the U.S. government and Congress to impose sanctions on the ICC in response to the prosecutor's request for the arrest warrants. Israel won't have to try very hard. Republican leadership, led by Mike Johnson, have already determined that they're going to go all out to sanction Karim Khan. And Biden seems to be in agreement. When former ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda attempted, as I said, to investigate the U.S. crimes in Afghanistan, the war crimes, and at that time, Trump slapped sanctions on Bensouda and her family. And notably, Biden rescinded them when he took office. So this would be an interesting, in my view, an interesting hypocritical turn should Biden decide to sanction Karim Khan. These charges, how it turns out, will be the greatest test that the rules, this is kind of the phrase that's used, the rules-based international order. The rules-based international order has been in decline for a long time. I'm a big admirer of Spencer Ackerman. He's got a blog called Forever Wars. And he has one of his blog entries linked at the Gaza Corner section of tonight's playlist. And he titles it, Biden Unites with Republicans Against International Criminal Court, subtitled, It's a Death Spiral for the Rules-Based International Order, as Team Biden says it's open to retaliation against the War Crimes Court for indicting Israel. Quoting from his piece, the liberal and conservative wings of the rules-based international order are united to defend impunity for war crimes when the U.S. or its clients commit them. This is obviously not the Biden administration's posture when Russia or Sudan commit war crimes. The ICC, their actions demonstrate, is for those outside the rules-based international order. A senior policy advisor during the Obama administration, Ben Rhodes, said, quote, there is no such thing as a rules-based international order if the rules only apply to people in countries you don't like. If the warrants are issued, it means that the 124 ICC member states will be legally obligated to arrest Netanyahu and Gallant and the three Hamas members if they enter the sovereign territory of any of the ICC member states, and they will be legally bound to extradite them to The Hague. Of course, the military leaders of Hamas don't travel outside of tunnels these days. And Haniya lives in Doha, the head of the Politburo of Hamas, the head of the political wing. And he lives in Doha in Qatar, which is not a member of the ICC. But in practical terms, the arrest warrants could eventually lead to sanctions. It could lead some countries to imposing an arms embargo on Israel or economic sanctions. And of course, not all the signatories will actually cooperate. Hungary has already said it won't. It's a close ally of Israel, especially Netanyahu. And I'm sure there will be others. Hamas's leaders are on record as saying I think they said this before there were charges. Remember, Palestine only recently became a member of the ICC, and at the time, Hamas said that they would cooperate and show up at The Hague to defend themselves if Israel would do the same. So if Netanyahu and Gallant surrender to The Hague, Hamas says it will also. Of course, Netanyahu and Gallant will not voluntarily surrender to The Hague. The other earthquake ruling this week came from the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, which Israel is a member. You may have read the headlines all over the place. Most of them said, ICJ ruled Israel must stop its Rafah operation. But that's misleading because it's not necessarily true. It's open for debate because the wording by the ICJ is kind of open to interpretation, a little vague. And the ruling said, this is what exactly it said. It said, the court considers, this is a quote, the court considers that in conformity with its obligations under the Genocide Convention, Israel must immediately halt its military offensive and any other action in the Rafah governorate, which may inflict on the Palestinian group in Gaza conditions of life that could bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. So it doesn't end the sentence by saying must immediately halt its military offensive and any other action in Rafah. It says it must stop military actions that may inflict on the Palestinian group in Gaza conditions of life that could bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. The court ruling was approved by the panel of 15 judges from around the world. It was a 13-2 vote. The two judges that voted against it were from Uganda and naturally from Israel. And although legally binding, it can only be enforced if member states appeal to the UN Security Council with a request to have a vote to have the ruling implemented. Historically, Israel has always leaned on the United States to use its veto power as the voice to block enforcement and then enable Israel impunity against violations of international law. According to the Israeli judge, Aharon Barak, according to his reading of the ruling, it does not mandate Israel to stop its military operations in Rafah unconditionally. Israel's official position is that it does not and will not carry out operations in Gaza which would lead to the destruction of Palestinian civilians, and that it continues to allow the entry of humanitarian aid while minimizing as much as possible any harm to civilians. This is blatantly untrue, but Israel believes it has eternal impunity as long as the U.S. protects it politically, so it'll say whatever it wants. And this is its biggest test case, though. Jake Sullivan, who is the U.S. National Security Advisor, said after his recent trip to Israel that so far, the Israeli army was not violating American red lines in Rafah. That red line is always kind of a moving target. Netanyahu has repeatedly vowed that Israel needs to completely destroy Rafah because there were four Hamas battalions situated there. But with Hamas's military units, the Al-Qassam Brigades, popping up all over Gaza at places the IDF had already declared defeated, no one can be certain where Hamas forces are from day to day or where their military leaders are. Kobe Michael, a senior researcher with the Institute for National Security Studies, said that Israeli officials agree that the four Hamas battalions supposedly still in Rafah are not as well trained as those in the north and are not an urgent problem. This despite Netanyahu using that as the reason to invade Rafah. The more accurate reason, I think, is Israel's near-term goal, its long-term goal, could be depopulating Gaza and resettling it with Israeli settlers. Could be. But the near-term goal in Rafah is to seal the border with Egypt, where Israeli intelligence believes most of Hamas's weapons come from, either through smuggling tunnels or through the crossing itself. This is why Israel seized the Rafah crossing, and they now control it. This is a quick audio drop-in for clarification. I'm recording this actually after the original Gaza Corner. I want to point you to an article that came out in the New York Times. It was updated on January 29th of 2024. The title is, "Where is Hamas Getting Its Weapons? Increasingly from Israel," subtitled, "The Very Weapons That Israeli Forces Have Used to Enforce a Blockade of Gaza Are Now Being Used Against Them." And I'll just excerpt this one quote, and this is from Michael Kardash, the former deputy head of the Israeli National Police Bomb Disposal Division and an Israeli police consultant. Quote, "Unexploded ordnance is a main source of explosives for Hamas. They are cutting open bombs from Israel, artillery bombs from Israel, and a lot of them are being used, of course, and repurposed for their explosives and rockets." And now back to the original recording of Gaza Corner. Israel seized the Rafah crossing, and they now control it, which is exacerbating to a huge degree the plight of starvation for the Gazans, which has been a policy of Israel to use starvation as a weapon of war. A big report was done by Human Rights Watch on this. There is no humanitarian aid coming through the Rafah crossing right now. The ICJ new ruling also includes an order to open the Rafah crossing, quote, "for unhindered provision at scale of urgently needed basic services and humanitarian assistance." The court also ordered Israel to allow the UN to enter Gaza to investigate violations of the Genocide Convention. The judges also ordered Israel to allow UN missions unimpeded access to Gaza, quote, "to investigate allegations of genocide and to submit a report to the court within 1 month on all measures taken to give effect to this order." The court also reminded states, countries of the world, that their obligations in relation to the transfer of weapons, where there is a risk that weapons might be used to violate international law, that they can be found complicit of war crimes. So basically, the UN is saying, don't transfer arms to Israel right now. But the U.S. continues to ignore this, as does Germany and many other countries. Professor Eliav Leiblich, an expert in international law from Tel Aviv University, pointed out that the wording of the ICJ order suggests that since there is currently no way to sustain life in the areas to which Rafah's civilian population has been forced to evacuate to, it's impossible to continue the fighting. Quote, "either you stop the fighting or you ensure reasonable living conditions in the evacuation zones. Israel should start going out of its way to improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza," unquote. There is little doubt Israel will ignore the ICJ directives, especially with the United States saying no red line has been crossed in Rafah and a likely veto in the Security Council by the United States. But this is how Saul Staniforth put it.
Israel has to comply with this, but second part of it is Israel will not. We know how Israel operates. We know there are numerous Security Council resolutions that Israel has not complied with. I have no expectation that Israel is going to suddenly put Prime Minister Netanyahu on television in an hour and say we're ending the Rafah offensive, which means that this court has done its bit, but this court has no enforcement power whatsoever in the UN system.
That was during an interview with Al Jazeera. He was never identified as to really who he is. He wasn't given a title. I looked it up for quite a bit and also asked three folks who I know who are very, very knowledgeable about Palestine. They don't know who he is either, but he's well-spoken, and I like what he had to say. Kenneth Roth, who you may know as the former head of Human Rights Watch, tweeted, or X'd, if you will, "Netanyahu faces a big problem. If he ignores the International Court of Justice order to stop his invasion of Rafah and open the Rafah border crossing, he creates more evidence of his criminality for the International Criminal Court case against him." Meanwhile, Israel's notorious finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, wrote on X or Twitter that Israel was in a quote-unquote war for its existence, adding that stopping the invasion of Rafah was akin to demanding Israel, quote-unquote, cease to exist. He warned that stopping the assault meant, quote, the enemy will reach the beds of our children and women throughout the country. History will judge who stood by the Nazis of Hamas and ISIS. Smotrich, full-time dehumanizer of Palestinians in every which way. Meanwhile, Israel's assault on Rafah, which the Biden administration describes as limited, remains devastating. Israel has put five brigades, the military said an estimated 10,000 troops, into the Rafah operation. Mohammed al-Masri is an accountant who has been sheltering in a tent in Rafah for months. He lives on the western edge of Rafah, which has not been invaded yet by the Israelis, but bombing has taken place. Over the last 2 weeks, Israel has reduced entire neighborhoods, particularly in the eastern part of Rafah, into rubble. Quoting al-Masri, the airstrikes are continuous and intense, and the smell of smoke doesn't leave the air. They shoot and bomb us constantly, but what scares us the most are the drones. In the last week or so, 800,000 Gazans have fled from Rafah to nowhere. There's nowhere safe to go. And they face snipers. They have an acute lack of food, medical care, and shelter. No one can live or survive this way. The ICJ and the ICC have punctured Israel's shield of impunity, but I wonder, will it amount to any change for Palestinians in Gaza? Can a U.S. ally actually be held accountable for war crimes in the ICC? On its own, Israel will ignore the rulings. If Biden continues to block the UN, this may be the end, the death knell for the so-called rules-based international order.